Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. The show tapes live some weeks on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Check my Twitter feed, ANNZAC, for more. Enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to AnCast. I'm Zach Birchie. We're joined once again, very special guest, always happy to have him back on the show, CEO of Right Stuff, Sean Kleckner. Sean, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Zach. Appreciate the ability to be on and talk to you and the fans.
Yeah, it's been a little while. I think we do this like once a year around now-ish, and I'm always excited to do it again. It's been a year for you guys. A lot of Gundam.
Well, I mean, people do like Gundam, so we want to keep giving them what they want.
Right, yeah. It's
fun to work on, too. You know, all in all, I mean, it's been a really good year for us.
Great.
I mean,
I'm glad really, to hear
really
that.
Happy with, the sales this year are up. Very pleased about that. Lots of new stuff that we're doing over here. We've made some internal changes for efficiency. We've got a lot of great stuff that our employees are doing in terms of philanthropy. We've got some great things that we're doing for the employees. It's been a good year for us.
Great.
I certainly can't complain by any means.
I'm glad to hear that.
It's been a great year in terms of releases. I mean, there's been a lot of great anime released this year as well. So, I mean, you can't complain about that either.
It feels like the entire catalog is coming back. So pretty much anything, you know, anyone wanted to be available is now, you know, coming back out again in some form or another. You guys have definitely been part of that, especially with the Gundam catalog, as we've already discussed a little bit. Can you characterize anything for us in terms of sales? Like, what's, in terms of discs, like DVD and Blu-ray, what's been doing the best for Right Stuff?
Well, I mean, it's really kind of interesting to watch the market as it continues to mature. I would say that this year, over the course of the last two or three years, really, you know, we have a lot of new people that are coming into the market. Anime kind of goes in cycles. I've kind of noticed that over the years, being the old fart that I am in the market now. But the things kind of come around and that have been the perennials, like your Dragon Ball. Obviously, there's a new Dragon Ball again. Sailor Moon is being brought into the market again. To have R back out has been a super strong seller for us. But I think the biggest change has just been an influx of new people coming into the market based on new products that are coming in. Based on the ability to have easier access to, streaming of the product. In terms of titles, I mean, it's hard to isolate because there's so many things that have come out that are old and, in terms of real catalog re-releases and stuff that's come out that's new. The other thing that I can definitely say is we finally got over the dearth of products that were more niche-oriented in terms of your mass market releases.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the bigger budget titles coming back into the market, and that's, I think, definitely pushing people, when they buy that, to then, have an interest in picking up something else that's out there. People are obviously much more interested in checking out other anime titles if they come to, and they say, well, geez, this brand-new title, I'm really excited about that. No matter what it is, because there's going to be something. If I come and watch Blood Blockade, I'm going to have something else that I'm going to have that's interesting to me, because I like that show, so then I'm going to go out and actively seek out something similar to it. And that's always the biggest challenge. As more and more product becomes available in the market, think about, 20 or 30 years ago, how much anime was there? I mean, there was a lot of anime in Japan, don't get me wrong. There's always been a lot of anime in Japan. But the availability of product at this point is so wide,
right,
that it's hard for somebody not to be able to come up with at least something that they like.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. If you can't find an anime that you like, then maybe look a little harder.
Well, it's a plus and a minus, to be honest with you, Zach, because, I mean, you get into a position where your catalog is harder to get in front of somebody to get them to understand what it is,
right,
to know what it is.
Yeah.
If you go back to deep catalog, unless you come back and have some reason that you can come through and bring it back, you know, it's difficult. Unless you got, for example, somebody has a new title, a director comes out with something that's brand new that they can tie back to an older title, it's difficult to get people to look at back catalog. It's no different than, you know, if you look at DVD sales in general or Blu-ray sales in general, the home video market has always been new release driven. So you're pushing this brand new show that comes out, and then most companies, then they just kind of drop it off and say, well, let's move on to the next big release. You know, that's one of the things that we've been trying to really push this year, is how do we work with the customers to have them be able to say, well, this is what we'd recommend based on the things that you enjoy. Or, have you thought about this product because you enjoyed this brand new product that came out?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's plenty of product out there in the catalog, but if you don't know it's there, you know, then you're not going to you're not going to sell it. You're not going to be able to get it to the customer and get it in front of them.
Right. Yeah, it almost becomes a necessity. Like, the catalog is so deep and so vast that figuring out how to get the consumer to navigate that to what they actually would like becomes the challenge.
Well, and sometimes as an anime fan yourself, you know that even if I think you, just because you like X title that you'll like Y, doesn't necessarily mean they're escaped.
Yeah, absolutely. Right.
You know, I might think that, you know, this title is fantastic, but you might think it really sucks. So you kind of run a fine line on it, but for the most part, and even if you try to tie directors together, you can't really necessarily even do that. Just because somebody likes Sailor Moon doesn't mean they're going to like Tamayura, even though you've got, you know, similarity and a number of cast member production staff. So, I mean, you have to be able to say, well, is it a director issue? Is it a story issue? Is it a character designer issue? So, if you can tie to the customer and say, well, is it the character design that you're interested in? Is it the story that you're interested in? Is it, you know, the genre? Those are the toughest pieces to get to figure out what is it that the customer wants and how can you serve them up what's not this month's release.
Yeah, right. I mean, and you know, this is a similar, it's kind of a similar issue with anime itself when it, you know, before it even hits DVD. Like, this is a problem with streaming catalogs as well, the curation and getting things in front of people that they might actually like. To that end, what have you noticed have you noticed anything new in the last year with in regard to the relationship between streaming and disc sales?
Well, I mean, I will tell you, years ago, I always thought that there was a detriment, to customers that would go to the streaming sites and do just the streaming. Okay, I would say, oh, I'm gonna watch the streaming, and then I'm not gonna buy any of the DVD or the Blu-ray products. And I'm gonna have to eat some crow. I think I ate some crow on this last year when we talked about it. There definitely is. You know, one, there's a difference in terms of customers. Mm-hmm. Certain customers will only do stuff in streaming, and those certain customers will only do, products in, what do I want to say? Will only buy the physical goods.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at the correlation, though, of people that are able to tie, let's say, for example, the people that do watch this, you know, do the streaming and then come back and buy the product later. I mean, there is definitely a correlation. I can see a correlation even with manga purchases, for example. If you take and let's say, somebody has a new streaming piece, a new title, and I'm drawing a blank right now. I apologize on a title that's popped up in streaming that's real recent. But I can take and see if that streaming product is put up. I can almost immediately see a jump in manga sales and merchandise sales. Generally, I don't see a product a jump in DVD and Blu-ray sales immediately because the product isn't available immediately. It's there will be a push later on when the DVD comes out or the Blu-ray is available on, I'm assuming, the streaming side for people to check it out before they buy. I don't have the statistics on that because obviously I'm not in that medium, but there definitely is a correlation. I mean, there's having that ability does, you know, and I think it serves the purpose of what used to be the Toonami or the television side of the market before that kind of disappeared. I mean, there's some new titles that are obviously popping back to that direction. I mean, they just announced Unicorn is the new Unicorn series is going to be on Toonami. But I do think that that's become more synergistic than it has been in the past.
Right. Okay. So that relationship sounds like it's only really improving, and it just sort of helps you determine what to stock at that point.
I think what you were asking me is what are the top sellers for DVD and Blu-ray, and I'm actually going to build a search for that while we're talking on the phone, and let's pause that.
Okay.
I'll have that answer for you in a matter of a few minutes.
Sure. Oh, here was the question I have. So the window between streaming and DVD and Blu-ray, basically, have you figured it out yet? Where if something streams really well, you can kind of count on it, or not count on it, but you can sort of hope that it will sell a little bit better on DVD and Blu-ray. Is the window between streaming and release important? Have you noticed, like, okay, if this took forever to come out, interest is way down when it comes out. If that window is short and it hit and it, you know, came out while the the time was right, does that window matter?
Yes, I would definitely say that. If the streaming window to the Blu-ray release is like 2+ years, then it does become a problem. If the streaming
really?
Window is 6 months, it's not quite as big of an issue. If it's simultaneous, obviously that would be the panacea.
Okay.
If I'm a customer and, you know, I'm watching this on streaming and I really want to keep it or I want to collect it, I want it right now. I don't want to have to wait for it. The longer that you make me wait, the more likely it is I'm going to move on to something else.
So the ideal So what would be the ideal situation? Would it be, so say like the big show this season is Yuri on Ice, right? So if you were able to sell Yuri on Ice Blu-rays, like episodes 1 through 4 to the hardcores, like as it aired, so episode 4 airs and then you have the Blu-ray, would that be like the ideal situation?
That would be absolutely utopia.
Okay. All right.
Now, I can tell you there's no way on God's earth that's going
to
happen.
That would ever happen, unless the production cycle in Japan changed. Like, they would have to change production to match that, right?
Yeah, or the biggest reason for that is the home video release in Japan obviously wouldn't be available, okay? So there'd be an issue of, well, would the person in Japan go ahead and just buy that and bring it back, which would cut into the sales in Japan. But biggest reason, really, frankly, is the fact that the broadcast version is not going to likely match the version that is on the home video release in Japan.
Right.
There's a lot of time, if not most times, there are significant differences.
Well, in the fantasy scenario, I was imagining production had changed to the point where what they're putting out on TV, like you're watching the show on TV, that Blu-ray's ready when the first episode airs. Mm-hmm. They just don't sell it to you until episode 2 or 4, however many are on the disc. It's just a thought, but I'm just curious because sometimes people say, no, you know, you put a lot of time in there and then more interest will build, the show will build a fandom, and then a year later it'll sell more. But it sounds like on DVD, the same is true there as it is in streaming. This stuff is hot for 3 to 4 months and that's it. And then it's dead.
Well, I think you have to look at it in a couple different ways. One, you've got the instant gratification society that we live in, and people,
sure,
you know, maybe would like to have that right away.
Yeah.
It also could be, you also could look at it, you have the people who really want it to come back around and have a really nice release of the product, or they want a polished version that's maybe not the broadcast version. Another part of the problem, of course, is the production of the stuff in Japan would have to be advanced in the cycle much more quickly.
Yeah.
The delivery of this product a lot of times to, you know, Japanese broadcasters or whatever is so absolutely tight. I mean, I've heard stories about, the production house literally walking a tape or walking a hard drive over to the TV station, you know, that the same day.
Right.
obviously you could not possibly, you know, I guess we could with a Herculean effort, but I mean, you would really have a struggle being able to push that back through and be able to have a physical release that would be available anywhere other than maybe an online site. in a quick manner. You certainly couldn't get it out into mass market retail that quick. You know, the cycles on mass market retail here are generally 3 to 6 months anyway. So, I mean, it would be very difficult to do. And the other piece, obviously, would be, the price point. It would be much more expensive. But it would, there would be a served market for that. It'd be the instant gratification people, or the, you know, the hot, the heavy hitter customer that really, really wants it. They want it right now. They don't want to wait 6 months. You're not going to probably catch dub versions that way again because of the tightness of the schedule. Although, you know, the dub simulcasts, you know, they are getting a lot better at being able to tie that much more quickly. But again, you know, I think that you'd be really, really tight on your pieces. So, I mean, I think that utopia is not really possible. But I think if you could get into a position that you could narrow the window between the streaming section and the actual release of the product that would be available to the public, I think it would be really good. And that has tended to be at least a year on average as of late, simply because the time to dub products, the time to actually build the plan that's required for the various retail outlets that are necessary to sell the products. So I think that it's going to be tough to narrow that window too heavily just because of the realities of being able to sell products, you know, to people through various mediums. But the sooner that you could get it in the customer's hands, the better. I mean, I agree with you. You get something that's really hot. I think this one also, I think, is even more of an issue with merchandise.
Right.
If you had merchandise on day one that customers in the United States could purchase, I think that that would be where the real uptick would be. When you have merchandise that comes out when the DVD comes out, it's not going to sell near as strong as when that thing is out for the very first time. It's just not going to. You'll have the, you know, brand awareness and so on, and you'll have people that are interested in it. But those people who you know, have a passing interest in the product, who have already watched it or whatever, may not. You know, they're on to the next thing already.
You know, I've also seen it expressed that it backfires if you pre-plan for that too much. So if you create something and you're like, okay, and we're going to have merchandise and everything available at, like, day one, people see it as you're pushing it too hard. Like, they're turned off by the amount of marketing that this thing has out of the gate, right? So you
You know, you've also got a risk level that the company that makes all that merchandise, if that product is
exactly,
and they're stuck with merchandise like there's no tomorrow,
right?
And most, you know, Dollar Tree has got all kinds of stuff to sell.
Yeah, right. And most anime is like a brand new thing that lasts 13 episodes and then never exists again after that. So it's
right.
You know, it's a really tough market. Like, there's a million ways you can attack the problems.
It's definitely a catch-22 on all sides.
Yeah.
I definitely would agree with that.
yeah, definitely. So let's talk a little bit about Gundam. I know, like, obviously we want to talk a little bit about sales numbers, but we'll wait a little bit on that.
I actually have that report.
Oh, great. Okay, we can talk. Okay, so then...
So, looking at some top sellers for the year, some of this is going to be skewed by holiday.
Okay.
For example, I mean, the Melancholy Harui Suzumiya, the Ultimate Collector's Edition, was a really strong seller this year. A lot of that we sold during Christmas, but it's still, there was a lot of pent-up demand for the collector version.
Yeah.
You know, Death Note... Omega Edition was another strong one for us. But, I mean, it's ones that I'm not surprised by. You know, Death Note, Sailor Moon,
right.
Code Geass, the re-release of that in the limited edition was strong. But if you come into other titles, we're looking at, you know, we got Strike the Blood, My Love Story, High School DxD Season 3, Is It Wrong to Pick Up Girls in the Dungeon? That was an interesting one that I saw that had sold really strongly.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Neon Genesis 3.33. I mean, that there was such a pent up demand for that. It just has become kind of a perennial continuing seller.
Right.
Full Metal Alchemist. I mean, the fact that that product was announced, it was going out of print. Then there was a mad rush. You know, it was like there was a storm coming, and everybody had to go to the grocery store and get the last loaf of bread.
Right.
The Full Metal was the, you know, there was just a huge scramble to get into that. The Prison School, another one that doesn't really surprise me very much. Some of the things I do like about this, and I mean, I guess this is kind of a segue I'd like to kind of mention too. I'm seeing a lot of things as I'm just kind of looking through this list that all say limited edition.
Okay.
And, you know, I will say limited and collector's editions, that's been a change in the market over the course of the last couple of years that I've seen growth in substantially. And I think that there's a lot of reasons for that. One, I think that the customers are wanting something beyond what they can get on streaming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I'm going to buy a product, I want to have not only the show, but I want lots of extra stuff that I can have with it. You know, and some of it just, you know, I guess that kind of ties in. You know, you've got people that just are wanting something more, you know, for value. If I'm going to collect something, just a DVD in a DVD, you know, Amory case isn't something that I'm as excited about as, you know, this is something that looks really special that's got a really nice presentation to it. So that's definitely something that I would kind of point out. And then I guess just looking at a couple few more of these, Nichiju, Love, Shinobio, and Other Delusions, Knights of Sidonia, Seraph of the End, Data Live, you know, things that I've really, none of these are just surprising to me beyond the boundary. If you look at that limited edition change that I was just kind of mentioning, I mean, I've just noticed that, you know, and it's very possible that some of that is skewed and we have a lot of collectors that come to purchase from us, but I definitely have seen more of an uptick in those releases that have been available from the vendors. They're actually offering a lot more of those than they have in the past. And I think that there's definitely been a response to that. I mean, the Harui one, for example, sold out at wholesale before the pre-book date. I know that they went back and they're doing a second print on the Escaflown and the Code Geass sets because, again, they sold well beyond what they'd expected, and those are catalog.
I mean, those titles are all, like, the absolute biggest success stories of the last, like, 20 years.
Well, they are.
Like, they're huge. Disagree. Those are huge titles.
But they're products that are
but you're right.
being brought back.
You're right.
And they're being brought back in, you know, looking at the products that you're having in the market that are... there was an old TV show or TV commercial years and years ago where NBC was running this stuff where it said, well, if it's a rerun, if you haven't seen it, it's new to you.
Right.
Okay. These are new products to this new group of people that are coming to the market. And obviously, not only are those people interested in these products because of the marketing push that's put behind them, but the people that are, you know, the fans that have been in the market are now coming back and saying, well, you know, this is a nice presentation of this. It's on Blu-ray. You know, now I'd like to pick that up.
Yeah. I mean, those are pretty much if you were an anime, if you at any point in the last like 15 years, you were an anime fan and even like casual, you would have heard of those. Like you would have seen those.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's good. That's why I brought that up earlier. I was saying like, well, the whole catalog's coming out, like anything you would want now is available. You're sitting on one of the last ones. Gundam Wing, you're sitting on that one. but that's really great that it's all selling in the numbers even better than what they projected. I mean, I thought it was kind of odd to begin with that Funimation decided to do a Kickstarter on Escaflowne as though it wasn't this giant profit bomb just waiting to happen. But you know, in fact, it sold even better than their projections. I guess that's or what you would have expected. That's great.
Well, I mean, I knew it would sell really well. I'll admit myself that I was a bit puzzled that they pushed that as a Kickstarter.
Yeah, a little weird.
And it sounded like there was a little bit of an issue with the way that that was all handled on the backside. But you know, the fact of the matter is. You know, Escaflowne was a top seller at the time. It's a perennial. You can come back and say Sailor Moon is a perennial. You can say that Dragon Ball Z is a perennial. There are certain titles that are always going to be popular, and they become more popular every time that somebody comes back and you know puts out you know a new series of it, or there's a new presentation of it or something like that that allows us to say, well, look here, this is something if you're coming in new to the market, this is something that you want to start with. Or it gets a presentation on a big streaming site, or it gets moved to, you know, a different spot. I think that there's definitely a lot of, you know, opportunity there for customers who have not been in the market to grab something that is a perennial and get exposed that way. But I think it also, if we can get new reasons for them to pick up this product. If I saw Escaflowne, and you know, years ago, but now there's this Blu-ray version of it. It's got these extra features, and you know, I want to share it with my kids, or I just want to see it again because I remember how much I enjoyed it. I think that there's certain titles you can certainly do with that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, for years and years, you couldn't buy Akira on Blu-ray.
No, and you know, obviously, the minute that Akira was available on Blu-ray, that did really, really well for us.
Yeah, right. So when Evangelion TV eventually comes out again, it'll do really well for you, I'm sure.
I await that day with great anticipation.
Yeah, I'm sure. So I wanted actually your opinion on this. mm-hmm. We just saw a major industry shakeup, not really shakeup so much as a partnership between the two biggest distributors in the industry, Funimation and Crunchyroll. They're working together now, and they're also working on packaged media together now. And you're a retailer, and I was curious how that impacted you. And what your opinion of that whole merger, not a merger, that whole partnership is?
Impact on me for physical media goods is pretty limited yet, because there really hasn't been anything that's come out of that.
Of course, right, yeah.
To this point.
Speaking speculatively.
Obviously, we get into next year when that product starts to make its way into the market. I mean, I think it'll obviously be good for me, because there'll be product available for us to sell. Mm-hmm. I mean, every time there's something to sell is a good thing. There's been a lot of output there that really hasn't been available in the grand scheme of things that, you know, has been available only on streaming, for example, but not really made available on packaged media. So I think that there's a demand for some of that product.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of my opinion of the whole process, it really depends upon how this affects how things are done in Japan.
Right.
It seems to me, from looking at or reading about this, you know, the actual streaming is kind of being segregated in where we have, you know, certain titles going to Funimation in terms of their streaming, and certain titles that are going to Crunchyroll in terms of their streaming, and certain titles that are going to be presented on either one. So I do think that it provides more choice for the customer, only because there's more available. If it changes the way that Japan does business in terms of the way that licensing goes, then I think it's going to be great, because the licensing cost of this product is just skyrocketed
right
over the course of the last couple of years. And when that happens, you know, your stronger titles drive that price way up, and the titles that are kind of in the mid-range become, I don't want to say unavailable, but they're much more difficult to do much with, because there may not be enough sales to justify what is going to be required from Japan to license that title, even though it doesn't have quite the popularity. I mean, I'll kind of give you a generic example. If right now, as I mentioned, all that pricing is just way, way up in the sky. Okay, for anything that's coming out new that's simulcast or whatever, there's a lot of stuff that's coming out there. So if there's a title that's, let's say, a mid-range title, or a title that's more niche oriented, that's not going to have the broad appeal of an Attack on Titan or something else. Japan doesn't seem to understand that concept. So they're going to say, well, we can get this huge money for, you know, the brand new titles that are coming out. So that means that this niche moe title, well, we should get the same amount of money for that.
Sure.
And that's not really very realistic.
Right.
But then it drags down to, well, anime is really hot, and we got this huge licensing fee for the brand new streaming that we just put up. So that means all the catalog product now also should be worth 10 times what it was worth last year. Well, that's right. Also pretty unrealistic.
Well, I mean, so a lot of people were characterizing this as just a pricing bubble. And, you know, you had these two competitors going back and forth creating kind of a pricing bubble, and that now that they're working together, that pricing bubble will pop. And those prices will come back down, but it will also have negative impact on the size of the Japanese industry. That's what a lot of the speculation I'm seeing out there.
Well, and I don't know. I mean, that's the big question mark right now. Is
right.
Is,
what will
is
happen?
Gonna be
yeah.
Leveling out. Is there going to be leveling out of that pricing? Is it going to drop or not? Like anything else, if I'm getting a price and I'm continuing to get that price, and now I've got two different people that are working together, I'm going to still want that price. I'm not going to suddenly say, well, because these two guys are here, there's going to be less bids. It just isn't. I think that's going to be tough to say. Well, there's going to be a significant drop off, but even if it was a leveling off, it'd be something. But I mean, the goal that I'm hoping that is achieved here is that we'll have that leveling off. There'll be more involvement in terms of you've got two people or two companies that really they have a good grasp on the market, and they can say, well, come on, Japan, we're the hitter here. These are the titles we want you to make. We want you to start making these titles that actually are more broad appeal, as well as the products that are more Japanese market only appeal. I think that it really kind of remains to be seen if there's going to be a change in that particular portion of the business model. Now, I mean, production-wise, obviously, if there's a cost sharing and the way the production can be, the cost of production itself can be driven down, or the speed at which that production can be completed so that we can narrow that window that we talked about earlier, that in itself would make a big change in our market.
But then that doesn't sound likely, because the anime industry is already running completely ragged. Like, there's a lot of complaints about the conditions. Like, as it is, getting that time down or making it cheaper, I don't think that those all sound terrible to me.
I'm talking more about the domestic market in,
sure.
in that scenario, Zach. I'm saying if Funimation and Crunchyroll in their partnership can drive down the cost.
Of the license,
of
I
the
see.
Licensing of the product, which means that we don't have to sell it for as high a price.
Gotcha.
If they can drive down the cost to produce the domestic version of it, and if they can drive down that window that is between the Japanese release and the U.S. release, I mean, that window is, like I said earlier, there's a definite impact the longer that window is.
Right. Right.
So, I mean, that's kind of what I'm hoping from it. I don't want to say calming, because that's not really a good word for it, but I'd like to see it, give a layer of stabilization to the market that has mm-hmm. not been there for a little while.
Right. Okay. Well, that's all very reasonable. I like that. It sounds like we're sort of at a point now where 2017 is going to be a real, like, wait and see kind of a year. Like, we will see what happens. But it doesn't sound like there's any real doom on the horizon, but sea changes for sure.
Well, let's just not hope for doom. I'm not looking for that in any way, shape, or form. But,
yeah.
Again, the amount of product that continues to be added, the simulcasts, really drive, more and more product. I mean, there's a lot of products, frankly, that I don't think would see the time of day over here if there wasn't a simulcast, because a lot of the publishers, when they do a deal with one of the streaming sites or whatever, they're trying to do that as, okay, well, here's our entire, lineup for spring. You got to take it all. I mean, you can't just pick and choose all the real popular stuff. So, I mean, there's products there that I think that might be surprise hits in our market that necessarily weren't that strong in Japan. I mean, you can go back and look at something like, Samurai Champloo or something like that, that really wasn't that popular in Japan but did very well here. High School of the Dead is an example that I always kind of pick out, because that type of show generally isn't a strong seller in Japan, and that type of genre. But, I mean, it was very, very strong here. So there might be some surprise hits that come out from things that get streamed that would not have been streamed in the past. I think that there'll be a generally larger availability of product. I think what might be the question of is how much of that product will make it to the physical space. I just don't know that.
Right. Yeah, it's an interesting conundrum. Like, what actually makes it to DVD and Blu-ray now is, it's there's no real way to predict it. I mean, unless you, you know, work at one of those companies, it's tough to know. Like, well, you know, it really did depend on the streaming numbers, but we get screeners in. Really? Okay. All right. I guess this did well enough to show up on Blu-ray.
Well, and then honestly, Zach, I mean, I have to give a positive thing there, too, because the fact of the matter is you can see that streaming number now and get a level of a feel for, you know, what popularity would be that you could utilize for that. I mean, in the past, that was kind of just a blank slate. You didn't, I mean, if you go back years and years and years ago, obviously you could put your stuff on TV, and if it did really well, you could tie it together and you could do all these other type of things. But now, you know, a lot of things are kind of shot in the dark, and I have to be honest with you, you know, and I'm sure this has probably been discussed by others on the podcast, but there are a lot of times that licensing at this point is, okay, well, thanks for coming by. Here's a picture of one of the character designs for doing it and a real basic like outline that's three sentences long of the show. We'll need your bid by next Thursday.
Yeah, right, yeah. That's
You don't even know what the product's going to be.
Yeah.
You have a vague generalization, but, I mean, there's a lot of faith in licensing these days.
Well, you know, and that's really interesting to point out, because just in the last 2 years, we saw Funimation get really involved in the production side on Dimension W, and I assume they vetted that. They picked a manga. But there was a whole manga source material and everything, like, sounded like a surefire thing, and the show wound up kind of falling apart. It wasn't popular. It didn't do well.
Well,
because of the writing.
It's always going to be titles that don't work and titles that do. I mean,
well, yeah, but
I think you've seen both of those guys get more involved in committees and stuff.
Absolutely.
For the reason of being able to have some level of control in that production.
Oh, sure. My only point was that you still can't predict it. You could try everything in your heart's desire to be. This is still creative. It's still subjective. It's still art. And so, you know, you could have Funimation saying, okay, we're only going to make sci-fi shows that appeal to nerdy men in America. And so they make those, and the writing falls apart in episode 9. People watch it streaming. They say, it sucked. They don't buy it. That's it. Well, it's over. You know.
But I think you could point that to every TV season of
absolutely. Yeah, that's the risk. Right. That's the risk.
There's plenty of stuff that pops up on regular TV or whatever that. Yeah, that just was awful. I mean, I remember when.
I mean,
and I hate to say this, but I mean, there was a number of reviewers that really panned Big Bang Theory when the first episode came out. And guess what?
Now, popularity doesn't equal quality, Sean.
No, well, nonetheless, you know, you can make the most quality show and have it not sell at all, and you can make the stupidest show and have it be the, you know, super strong. It doesn't make any. You know, a lot of it comes down to story and what people are interested in, and sometimes it's just, you know, marketing.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and that was only my only point was that they I feel like that was a really good faith effort on Funimation's behalf to get involved in the production of something that would hit in America. And I feel like they did their best. And the show itself, like, you just can't control it to that level where you can guarantee a hit. You just can't do it. It's just an interesting example. I no harm, no foul on them. I thought it was an interesting angle to take. And we've definitely seen a lot more of that. And I think that approach is what we're going to see changing a lot, is how involved they are in the production committees and, like, what their involvement really is. That'll be interesting.
Well, and that's only start. You're not going to start seeing that probably till, you know, this year or probably next year and the year after.
Right.
Only because of the fact that, you know, it takes, when they did get announced, you know, that, hey, we're getting involved in these things. I mean, it still takes quite a bit of time to get that show from you know, scribbled up character designs and a paragraph saying what it is to something that's actually, you know, to a produced form that can be shown. So, I mean, I think you'll see some effect of that over the course of the next couple of years.
Right. All right. Well, we have a lot of Twitter questions. We should probably start getting to them.
I think I skipped over one of your questions because we went back to the sales numbers. Was there one there that we missed?
Well, I asked what the best-selling Gundam series were.
In terms of actual Gundam sales?
Yeah.
Let me think here. What would be the... I want to say Zeta was probably one of the top one, but I need to think here for a second. You know, all of them have sold well. I mean, I've been very, very pleased with how they've come out.
Yeah.
There's none of them have done really poorly. Now that I think about it, I think Build Fighters actually was the strongest one that we had. which I thought was interesting.
That makes sense.
So I mean, if you look down from that, I mean, you know, you're looking at Build Fighters, and then probably back to Zeta, Double Zeta. The ones that have not been released here in the States before have actually really performed well.
Yeah.
They haven't been the top sellers because, I mean, they are kind of, there's a reason why that they probably weren't released before, I suppose. But, I mean, I think they're all really good. But they're moved over to the side. They're not dubbed and so on. So, I think that the fans really love them. But I think that the mass market fans are looking for the titles they saw on Toonami and so on. But yeah, Build Fighters, I think, was the strongest of all of them so far.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Well, let's go ahead and get to these Twitter questions. Let's see here. From Jeff Burns, what's been the most surprising thing about working with Sunrise on Gundam?
The most surprising thing? Let me think here. Well, I mean, obviously there's been challenges. We're going to have challenges with any publisher that working on. This is their crown jewel, so I mean, they're very, very protective of it. I would say that there's been, obviously been an issue with materials. We're getting far deep into some of the catalog here, so getting materials out on some of the older Gundam series has been a little bit more of a challenge than certainly I would hope. Part of that also is just a barrier to understanding. If we say, look, in the Japanese DVD set from 10, 15 years ago, there was this little clip, and we want it. Trying to explain that sometimes is a little bit of a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, for the most part, we have been able to get those things, and that's been a big plus. There's been a number of little shorts and things that we've added to these releases that have never saw the light of day before. I know that we've got some neat stuff coming up with Igloo and some of the other titles that are coming up soon. I think the other one that we've had an issue with, and I don't know that I can say this is a Sunrise issue specifically, but the scripts that come from a lot of these shows from when they were released back in the day really have some continuity issues.
Yeah.
So we're doing our best to clean those up as much as we possibly can. It's because, I want someone who comes in and watches from the beginning of the series all the way to the end, as much as possible, not to have them have names of characters that change or things that that don't really make any sense because the continuity isn't there. I mean, certainly there's continuity errors in the show regardless. I mean, that's just the nature of these shows. But as much of it that we can repair as we can, which we are doing.
Right, yeah, materials on Gundam, sort of modestly popular Gundam TV show from 1987 must be fun.
Well, I mean, you got to dig out. I don't know how dusty these things are or where they're stored over there. I mean, I would think they would be stored in a place that people could find it. I mean, all our masters are really, we're very organized, on our side. Their organization level, I mean, I can't speak to that. This is a production company. I can say historically from dealing with lots of different production companies over the years, especially if you get into something that's older, is stuck in a closet somewhere and somebody, maybe knows where it's at. I know there was an issue, for example, when we did, which title was it? Umi Monogatari. We ended up, the publisher didn't have the scripts. The producer didn't have the scripts. We actually ended up having to get them from, Tatsuo Sato. And the ones that we got had coffee stains and his actual written notes all over them.
Wow. That's really cool.
So, I mean, it's quite astonishing how a lot of times this stuff is just not well organized. Let's put it there.
Right. Well, you're also talking about, 30 plus years and countless people. I mean, it's not like one guy in an office building that says Gundam on it.
There's a guy in the basement. It's got a little red stapler, and he's in charge of the material.
Exactly.
Let's hope there's not a fire.
Golden Pelt asks, what's the chance that we'll see legal streaming for Gundam?
All good things come to those who wait.
Okay. All right. Charmander K asks, how does Sunrise divide the rights to DVD and Blu-ray? A lot of your Gundam properties were DVD first with Blu-ray later.
Well, there really hasn't been a lot of them that way. I can't
just the first couple.
The only thing
really
that has been DVD first would be Turn A, mean, everything else we've done either simultaneously or we haven't done a Blu-ray release. So if you, one factor that I'm going to tell people, and I'm going to tell you this flat out, if it hasn't been released in Japan on Blu-ray, it's not going to be released here first. I get this a lot. Well, how come, G Gundam isn't out on Blu-ray? Oh, it's not out in Blu-ray in Japan. Or actually that one is just recently released. Afterward does not have a Blu-ray in Japan. I can't put a Blu-ray out before they'll put it out in Japan. That's just not going to be allowed.
Right.
The original strategy here was to take the large TV series and to kind of break them into pieces. One being the product that had never been released here in our market, and the other being starting at the very beginning and just moving through the Universal Century. And that's kind of how, if you look at how the releases have been thus far, that's kind of the strategy that we've taken. In terms of, flipping it around, I mean, Turn A really, when we started that, we started this deal, there was kind of a resistance. It was, we don't want to make a huge investment in this because we don't know if anyone's going to buy it, because obviously it never got finished back in the day, and so there must have been a reason for that. We put out that release on DVD, and it's obvious that there's a response to the customer. And I said at the time, people want this on Blu-ray. It really needs to be on Blu-ray. but it just was, there was some, there's consternation there in terms of what we would, what will the market bear? What is it that the people want?
Mm-hmm.
So obviously being able to show that people do want it, it was much simpler to say, look, let's come back around and, put this show on Blu-ray as well. I mean, we've been doing the TV shows on Blu-ray. There's high def materials available for this. Let's get this back out in the market to the customers because it's what they really want. So that, now there are plenty of people who still would prefer to have, for any number of reasons, for price, for, maybe they don't have a Blu-ray player. I mean, that's certainly, there's still people out there that don't, that they want, they want the DVD release. So we do make those available as well. And we've done that on everything short of, I think, G-Recco. I don't think we did the DVD on that particular one.
Pretty much everything's coming out on Blu-ray now. I don't think I've seen a DVD from you guys in a little while at this point.
in terms of, unless it's a re-release, a product that we can't get high-def materials on, we really have been pushing towards the Blu-ray space. I mean, one of our more recent releases, The Town Where You Live, we did not put out a DVD on at all. Fantastic show, but I felt that the market was moving towards Blu-ray. We won't put out a DVD for Galaxy Angel when it's released next year. My market statistics, I can see what people are buying, and if you go back a few years, there was kind of this, well, there was DVD and there was Blu-ray, and then there was a close, the Blu-ray was growing, the DVD was coming off, then there was the point where it crossed the line where it was even, and at this point, Blu-ray has surpassed DVD.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of anime is being sold on Blu-ray now versus DVD. I mean, there is definitely, I can definitely show you statistics to that effect.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't surprise me that those Gundam releases are selling really well because it feels like that's all they wanted. They just wanted the show, nice little release, tidy, easy to buy, easy to track. That's all they wanted. I felt like, I don't know, I feel like you're doing a good job.
I appreciate the positive feedback. That's really great. There are people, again, who want, that still prefer to have the DVDs, and we do make those available. And there are some products, like I said, there isn't a Blu-ray in Japan. I think 0083 is another one, if I remember right, that we put out. There's no Blu-ray release in Japan. So what we did is we took the material that we had, and we made it the very, very best that we could make it. Mm-hmm. I still think it looks better than the previous release that was put out by Bandai back in the day. We cleaned up all the subtitles to the best of our ability and made the presentation, look good. We're going to make the title look as best as we possibly can based on what we have available.
Right.
So if there's no Blu-ray, then we're going to have to make the best, best DVD ever. If there is a Blu-ray, we're going to make the Blu-ray at the highest possible quality, and depending on the title, we'll make it available on DVD. Now, there are some titles, obviously, if you get into some of the compilations and that type of thing, that we may choose to have that be a DVD release, because simply the strength of those is not as strong as the TV series, and the sales volume isn't enough to really justify the extra cost that's required to put that into the higher formats.
Right. Hey, y'all haven't done 08MS team yet, right?
No, that's coming out.
That's coming out.
It's next 3 or 4 months.
Oh, cool.
I don't have the release schedule in front of me, but I believe that's coming.
I'm excited to see that one again. That was a good one. All right.
Yeah, I know that they've been working on Igloo because I was in there looking at that the other day. So
Igloo was, you're following in the footsteps of Oniamis Video, right? They put that out first.
Yeah, but I think there's sections of it that, if I remember right, were not released. So that
yeah, well, yeah, you will finally get a Blu-ray to match the HD DVD.
Well, I mean, if you have that collector's edition, yeah. I'm sure.
Yeah,
you got to find a player that'll play it at this point. That'd be interesting to find.
You know what? I find those in like Book Off, which is a Japanese used bookstore chain. I'm sure you've heard of it. You find those in Book Offs. All over the U.S., in the U.S. specifically, I find them there a lot.
I get a kick out of finding the old CAV, or, Disco Vision discs that, at auctions and stuff from time to time, the ones that actually had a needle that ran them. Some of those are just, it's hilarious to see how technology has changed.
Yeah. Big on Anime asks, has your license to Sound of the Sky expired yet, or will it soon due to Aniplex not allowing license renewals anymore? I don't know if that's a blanket.
Our license for that title is still active, so I don't see any problem for us.
That wasn't a blanket decree, I don't think. Aniplex didn't announce no more license renewals ever. I'm pretty sure they didn't say that.
You'd have to ask Aniplex. Maybe you should get somebody on the show to talk about that.
Yeah.
I mean, the large, I would say based on my view of where that's going, I think you'd find most of that product is not going to be not going to make its way back to renewal.
Well, hopefully they make it available. Stefan asks, well, maybe you have a personal opinion on this, which has been more impressive so far, Gundam Thunderbolts or Gundam the Origin?
Well, it depends on how you want to label impressive. Do you want to talk about sales? Do you want to?
Well, in terms of sales, which one's been better?
Origin is stronger for sales.
Right.
I will say that. But Thunderbolt's not finished either. So, I mean, once that came through, then they talked about more of that. So, the fact of the matter is that at the moment, the only thing I can gauge that from is the sale of the real high-end Japanese releases. But, I mean, it's only going to be a matter of time before we'll be able to make a presentation of that I think will be pleasing to domestic audiences.
CC Takato asks, what was the highest-selling anime of the Right Stuff holiday sale so far? Now, I thought you said Haruhi Suzumiya, but that's not it.
Well, no, that really did sell well, and it zipped through. But the actual top-selling item so far in the holiday sale has been the Death Note Omega Edition.
Well, that was really cheap, though. That was like...
Yeah. We're selling it for like $35.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a heck of a discount on the product, and it's a good it's a good show. So,
yeah.
I'm not really surprised that it's jumped all the way up at the top, but at the end of the day, it's been a lot stronger than... I guess it exceeded my expectations for the short period of time it's went on sale already. I mean, the holiday sale still got, several weeks yet. So,
right, yeah. Okay, we got a couple of questions about your packaging. Whenever you send out a box, it's always got, 15 layers, like cardboard and styrofoam, all this stuff in there to keep the product safe. I guess sort of general questions about your shipping method and how that impacts your business.
Okay, well, I mean, one of the things that I think that we can use to differentiate ourselves versus, the other people out there that you can buy products from is just the fact that that's a focus for us. Several years ago, we actually sat down and we designed a lot of the packaging that we use. A lot of it is custom corrugated that we have made, believe it or not, in Minnesota. We focus on, creating what they, a crumple zone around the product itself, making sure that it's wrapped up, that we've got cushioning. Now, that's not to say that, every product that gets to every customer makes it. I mean, I can't, as much as we will protect that product, if it runs through a machine at the post office sorting center and they just grind it in little pieces, or they run a forklift through it, or they run over it, I mean, nothing is going to protect that. But I've seen picture after picture of customers that will send us a note saying, look, I got my product, the box was all beat up, it looked absolutely terrible, but I opened it up and the product was perfect on the inside. I have to give a lot of shout out to my staff. They really, really focus on making sure that they take that extra time to make sure that when that product is packaged, that it should be door to door without beating all up. I mean, I'm sure you'll probably see it on TV for the holidays. They always have pictures showing all the sorting centers and all the product that zip through that, and you see how many packages are going through the system. I mean, we have semi trucks come out every day to pick up packages. I know there's packages, galore going around. When those things hit a sorting center, a lot of that stuff is done, most of it's done with machines. It's automated. So if something comes through and it gets stuck on a corner, or it gets stuck on a conveyor belt, or somebody dumps over a cart or whatever, I mean, nobody treats these packages like they're China that they inherited from their grandmother. It just doesn't work that way. I'm sure you've seen the things on TV where they catch the FedEx driver taking a 46-inch television and throwing it over a fence.
Right.
I mean, that's pretty much how all packages are treated. So
right.
When they make their way through the system, they're in a hurry. They want to get it done. They want to get it out there. So, I mean, that's one of the reasons why we, take that extra effort, to make sure that, the anime and manga that we get out to those customers, or especially like a large high-end figure or something like that. I mean, we are selling a lot of figures these days, and those definitely need to be specially packed because they're very delicate. I want to make sure that they get those to those customers without any problems whatsoever, if possible. Our damage rate's actually pretty low. So,
okay. I've only gotten one thing damaged from you ever. One thing.
Was that Popotan too?
That was Papua. That's why I have two of them.
Papua. Oh, shucks.
I still have the busted one. It's on my shelf. I can't even take it to a used place or something. I can't even do that. This is busted. All right. Okay, we got a couple of questions about a Canadian survey that you did recently, and if you could share any of the information from that, any interesting data out of Canada.
Well, I mean, we took we wanted to get a feel for what customers in Canada wanted, and what is it that that they felt in terms of our service that was of a concern to them, and the first thing that I noticed is. Back in the day, on our old system, we didn't have the fraud scoring that we had set up. Well, it really wasn't the same as what we have today. So we used to have people have to take and make copies of their credit card and send utility bills and all that kind of stuff just to prove who they were. And, that's frustrating, and nobody wanted to do that, and I got it. I mean, it was a small company, though. I couldn't, it was difficult to be sending huge product merchandise out there, without any level of validity because there's no... The fraud scoring internationally is very difficult to work with, and we didn't have as good a system as we do today. So that was the one thing people were saying, hey, I don't buy from you because you require all this extra paperwork. I don't do anymore. So we haven't for several years at this point. But, the other one was people complaining about taxes, that the product would show up at their door, and the little friendly Canada Post man would have his hand laid out and say, hey, I need you to pay all the taxes. And by the way, for the privilege of letting me collect these taxes, I'm going to send you another $10 Canadian bill I'm going to ask for another $10 Canadian for the COD fee. So a few years back, we put in place a system that actually collects all those taxes on the front end. And so when the customer... gets the product, all the taxes are collected, so they don't pay that $10 Canadian fee at all. And then we set that up as a process that we work with FedEx. So we're actually covering all the taxes and the customs on the front end. The customer doesn't have to deal with any of that stuff at all. And it still gets, if it leaves our building to any place in Canada, no matter how north, east, west, whatever, that you're in Canada, in less than, it's like 3 to 4 days, I think. So, that was the things we found from the survey is people didn't know about those services that we offered, And so that was, you know, I was kind of surprised by that because I think I thought we had really pushed that. But, you know, it's nice to know people don't know that so that you can kind of let them know. You know, the other thing, obviously, people are very concerned about the fact that the Canadian dollar is lower now. And, you know, there was a time when the Canadian dollar and the U.S. dollar were at parity, and that was great for Canadian customers. But I can't control the value of the Canadian dollar, and there's not a whole lot that I can do about that. So, you know, we try to offer the best pricing we can. And then there was a complaint that we had raised the cost of free shipping to Canada, which, you know, as far as I know, we're the only place that offers a free shipping method to Canada. I don't know anybody else that says, okay, you're in Canada, we're in the United States, we're going to give you shipping for free. I just don't know anybody that does that. But we had that conversation, you know, here that, you know, free shipping isn't really free. You have to pay for it with something, and the cost of international shipping rises even more per year than the cost of domestic shipping. So, unfortunately, we had to raise that, and we hadn't raised it for years, but we had to raise it in such a way that we could still keep profitability by being able to send that product. You know, international shipping is really expensive. There is no media mail option from, you know, Grimes, Iowa to, you know, to Canada or to Uruguay or to any place in Europe, for example. And, you know, I can ship something cheap with a fourth class mail, but I can't do that over the border, and it's really unfortunate. I wish there was a cheaper method, and especially once you get into something of trackability, there's you know, if you want to go cheap, there's no tracking, and it takes, you know, 3 months to get there on a boat, and you know, we certainly can't do that type of service. So it was a very interesting and enlightening survey. I'm glad that we did it, and you know, we do, you know, want to be able to serve those customers if we can. I mean, I know that they kind of get the short end of the stick on some of the streaming services.
All right. Okay. Nick C. asks, has RightStuff's increased email marketing this year been a profitable move? Do buyers purchase more frequently because of it?
Well, I mean, you have to go back and look statistically on how marketing is done. I know there's some people that don't like to get multiple emails a week, but the fact of the matter is it does work. Mm-hmm. And when you have so much stuff to present to people or to try to cut through the marketing noise, I mean, you have to do what is required to make that happen. And, you know, we want to keep people in touch and in the loop on the new items, the new sales that we have knowing, the discounts that we have going out there. And, you know, definitely it has worked. So getting that message out has been successful.
Okay. PX Sausage asks, I would love to know if RightStuff would consider an Amazon Prime-esque yearly paid service for free shipping.
If I only had a few billion dollars to spare to lose money on freight like that, that'd be absolutely fantastic.
Right.
If you look at a 10K for Amazon and look at how much money they lose on Prime shipping, I mean, I think you'd be just astonished. But what we did do is, you know, we added a lot of benefits that we're moving forward on to our God Anime membership club. So we're adding, you know, more discounts on various merchandise items we haven't added before. You know, a lot of figures are getting extra discounts now. We're going to add more special offers for the members who already done a bunch of those for Christmas already. We ship the member orders first. You know, there's lots of plans that I have on that front to increase the value of the God Anime program. I mean, versus just maybe just getting a coupon periodically or whatever. So I'm going to beef that up as heavy as I possibly can. You know, in terms of shipping, I mean, where we are located, you know, being in the center of the country, you know, you might not get the shipment in two days by second day air or whatever. But if we have that product in stock and we ship it from here, generally I can get to either coast in a fairly short period of time. You know, I often hear from people in like Florida that say they got, you know, a product that was shipped with free shipping in 2 days or 3 days. So I can't give freight away for everything. But I think time wise we're pretty competitive. You know, the other thing is, you know, Amazon Prime, you know, free people. Let's talk about how free shipping works, because this is one of the things that I do run into a lot. Well, how come free shipping is on every single item? How come I can't just buy a $2 item and get free shipping? Well, you know, when somebody funds free shipping, it's not really free, okay? You know, I just don't go to UPS and say, hey, by the way, this customer got free shipping, so, you know, you can't charge me for it. It doesn't work that way.
Right.
Okay. When you have just basic economics of how you sell a product, I mean, you have a product and you sell it to the customer for, you know, price A, and you buy it from the vendor for price B, and your profit is A minus B. All right. So if you give free shipping away, if A minus B minus shipping is less than zero, then you lost money. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's why you don't see somebody giving shipping away on a $2 item. You know, there's usually a minimum where it's whether it's $49 or $75 or $99 or whatever it is. You know, it's so that the vendor of the product has enough margin there to actually give that shipping to you at no charge, but still make something. You got to keep your lights on and keep your employees paid and make sure that they aren't eating ramen every single day like the poor animators in Japan are. You know, it's a delicate balancing move, and Amazon really has really pushed that market. I mean, that was always one of the big things that they did, and they lost a huge money on it on the front end when they did that, and they're well funded in order to be able to support that and build that. But you know, the general market can't afford to lose that kind of money on freight, and I'm more than happy to give good deals to the customer, but we have to make something. I mean, I have to take care of my people.
Right. Makes sense. I mean, Amazon Prime shipping, like, I don't know. It's one of those things where I feel like you are either buying into that free shipping ecosystem and there's a certain way that you have to shop and a certain way that you buy things, like your life kind of the way you shop kind of works with the free shipping instead of the other way around, you know?
Right.
NJ asks,
keep in mind too, that free shipping has to get paid for by somebody. So a lot of times it comes up that the actual price of the product is raised in order to at least make more money to cover at least more of that freight.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I actually personally decided, you know, I think I'm just going to do all my do as much of my shopping in person as I can, like a little while ago. It's worked out for me so well. NJ asks,
small retailers appreciate that.
Yeah. Is there any chance we'll see Space Adventure Cobra, I assume he means the original TV series, on Blu-ray?
I mean, it's certainly possible. It's always a tough call to figure out what titles to put on Blu-ray, because, I mean, there is a lot more expense in actually building the product itself and the replication costs and so on. So I really can't comment right now. I mean, anything is possible. I'm making a heavy look all the way through the back catalog to see what I can do for HD on our titles. Some of the titles, when you get back to the age of these catalog titles, there's no HD material. It just isn't. So we did a survey a while back and said, well, would you want it on Blu-ray even if it has to be an upscale?
Mm-hmm.
And people seem to say, yes, I want it on Blu-ray, even if it's an upscale. There's been a few titles that I've seen put out in the market from a couple players that they're just doing what they call SD on Blu-ray, which means they're slamming as much, content as they can on a Blu-ray at the SD resolution, which, is nice because, people have limited shelf space and you get an 80 episode show that's SD, you can put an awful lot of those on each disc instead of having to have a 40 disc set.
Yeah.
But we have to kind of address each title as we go and figure out what do we have for material, how could we make it look? And I'm not willing to put out a product that isn't to a standard that I would purchase it. So I mean, I could slam out a bunch of really cheap ass stuff, and I'm not going to do it.
Okay. All right. Let's see. Charred Knight wants to know if anyone at Sunrise asked you to include the insert with V Gundam that says you should not have bought this, like they did in Japan.
No.
Okay. That tell me now. You know, he's a character.
Yeah, he wasn't really happy with that show. But you know what? I think there's been a lot of people that have really enjoyed it. We've had good comments about it.
Well, you've made it available. That's what's important. Chideki asks, how long until the physical catalog fades into the sunset like the Sears Christmas catalog? It's a little bleak there, I guess. He's predicting the future.
Well, somebody apparently doesn't like their catalog or doesn't think that it's...
No, I think he's concerned about its... I think this man is concerned about its future, Sean.
Well, I mean, catalog marketing still works. I mean, the... there is a reason why people still make these catalogs, even though that a lot of businesses migrated online. You know, people look at the catalog, they look at the items that are new. They might not order like they used to. I mean, we still do. I mean, I think I am not aware of anybody else in our market that still takes orders by phone.
Yeah.
Or takes orders by mail. I mean, we actually have people that still fill out an order form, send a check or a money order to us, and we ship them the product. I mean, as far as I know, nobody else in the market is still doing that. But, you know, I don't expect that we're going to have everybody doing that when we send out a catalog. You're going to have a lot of those people who are going to look through the catalog. They're going to create a wish list maybe on the website, or they're going to have, you know, take a black marker and circle everything that they want, hand it to their mom, or whatever they're going to do with that. And then they go and buy that online. So I don't think that we're planning on making the catalog go away. I mean, I think it's still very, very effective. We'll probably look to continue to morph how the catalog is laid out and how we present products, as well as probably putting some additional content in there to make it so that it's more than just here's a list of products. I mean, maybe, you know, articles and that type of stuff to make it more of a hybrid to the customer that gives them something to look at besides here's a list of all the things that are recent or big top sellers.
Right. Okay.
The Sears Christmas catalogs were huge. I don't think we'll, you know, if you go back to like, and I still have some of these around in the office, I should put one up on like a throwback post or something. But if you go back to catalogs that we did back in the, you know, the early 2000s.
Oh yeah. You got to post those. You got to post those.
You know, 3/4 inch thick, you know?
Yeah. It was great.
I don't think I could do that anymore.
No, of course not. But if you that would be really fun history if you could post some old. I mean, I know you've worked with Lance Highskull. He's the man to do that. Go through those old catalogs.
I was laughing. I actually was speaking with Lance a while back, and I sent him a picture. I was trying to clean my office because my office is a perpetual hoarding batch of crap because I just never get around to you know, filing and that kind of stuff. And I found the booklet for AnimeCon 91.
Ugh.
And I was like, wow.
Wow. outstanding. All right. Megazone 23 Part 2 asks, what happens to merchandise that, despite all efforts, doesn't sell? Are they sent to an island of misfit anime goods?
It all goes to the land of no tomorrows.
Okay. I mean,
some of it's donated to, you know, we'll donate some of it to worthy causes. I mean, we give some product, especially if it's damaged, we'll give it to libraries.
Okay.
We send it to clubs. Some of it's mixed in with promotions. Some of it is just returned to the publisher. You know, there are products that don't sell. There are products that we buy too much of. You know, we look to do what we can with it. I'm thinking maybe about sending it to you for Christmas. I mean, I know you need a copy of Popotan again, don't you?
I already have two. Thanks to your company, I actually already have two of them. So a third one, well, it'll complete the set, I guess.
Well, I think I got a copy of Root Search on VHS.
Oh, jeez. Man, Root Search. All right. You know how to dig deep.
Can't wait for the Blu-ray.
You can always dig deep, Sean. Penguin Truth wants to know what made you folks decide to do the Turn A Gundam DVD Blu-ray exchange, which is great. He thinks it's great.
Well, you know, I looked at it as this was the first Gundam that we put out in our releases of the product. And at the time, I really wanted to do a Blu-ray of it. We kind of were hedging on whether that was going to happen or not. And the fans bought the product. They did, you know, they showed us that they really wanted Gundam. They followed through by buying the other Gundam that came out. And to me, I just thought it was the right thing to do. I met with resistance. You know, ultimately, we decided that we were going to make that happen, and we did. So I guess I looked at it as a reminder to the fans that, you know, we weren't looking to, you know, to scorch them by making them have to go back and buy it again if they weren't happy with the fact they didn't have a Blu-ray. I mean, this happens in the home video market all the time. How many releases of, you know, Total Recall can you have or whatever? There's this version, and there's a version with the special figure, and there's the version with the fancy packaging. I mean, it happens in the market all the time. That's how people keep catalog product fresh. But I mean, I just thought it was a good way to show the fans that we appreciated their support.
Okay. All right. I like this question from Andrew K. What's the most unreasonable customer request you've ever received? You must have to. That must require some thought.
I could go on and on and on that one.
Well, you talk about this stuff on Twitter sometimes about how frustrated you are with people. So I expect a good story here.
I always enjoy the okay. I bought this product this morning, and I bought it with free shipping. Why isn't it here yet?
I mean,
Saturday. the person who wants the product. I had one guy that actually asked if I would sign one of the products. That was interesting. I did do that. I mean, people ask, want my signature. I mean, more power to them. Isn't that exciting? But I mean, the people will ask for the world. I mean, I'm unhappy because this product came in and it showed up and it had a little teeny tear in the shrink wrap, and so therefore it needs to be replaced. Or the book that I got in the binding process. I mean, I'm sure you've seen it when you buy a book. Sometimes there might be a nick in the bottom of the book,
or right.
The glue might have a little bump or whatever. I mean, we'll have customers that will demand a replacement or a refund. I really always enjoy the person who buys the product, gets it, watches it, says he doesn't like it, and says he wants a refund. and not only that, when you say, okay, fine, we'll give you a refund, but you need to send it back to us, and they said, no, we threw it away.
Oh, geez.
That happened a couple of years back.
I was
well,
so
I
angry.
Refund. I didn't like that title. Okay, we'll send it back to us. We'll give you a refund. Well, no, I threw it away, but I still want a refund.
Well, no, I'm an incredible weirdo who literally threw it in the garbage. What? Okay. All right.
The people that tried to send product back to us that they bought in 1997.
Oh, geez.
We had one of those about 6 months ago. Somebody tried to return a DVD that is so far out of print that there is no way on earth that they bought it any time recently.
That's a 20-year-old.
One that comes back with a receipt that's for some other company.
Yeah.
I mean, it's... The customer behavior can be interesting. I mean, you just kind of, I want to do my best for the customers, and I enjoy working with them. I mean, that's I often troll social media and from time to time. I don't have as much time as I used to do that, but I'll be on the forums or I'll even there are times I'll go out and take phone calls because I mean I think it's important for you to know what the customers are interested in. I mean, nobody knows that I'm doing their live chat. I don't tell them. But, I'll do it from time to time. You want to take care of people, but there are always the people who want to push the limit. The person who orders, 10 times today, but wants to cancel all 9 of the 10 orders the next day, and then the 10th order is ready to ship, but they don't have the money for it right now. So can you hold on to this for, 6 months until I can get a new job? It's like, no, I'm not your bank. I can't do that.
Wow. I mean, you feel for that guy, but.
should not. I mean, as much as a retailer, I want people to buy. People should not buy if they can't afford to buy.
Mm-hmm.
you shouldn't not eat because you want to buy a Blu-ray.
Now,
it doesn't make any sense.
Are you telling me that a product like anime has a problem with things like that?
So, I mean, I think it's important, and we do our best to take care of people, but there's always going to be somebody who pushes the limit, who, expects to be able to use, wants to use a coupon that's expired 2 months ago, that wants to, expects that they can bully the customer service reps. Do not expect if you call and swear at the customer service reps and tell them they're horrible people and threaten them or tell them you're going to do them bodily harm, that they're not going to hang up on you, because they will. Because I've told them to do that. You just don't do that kind of stuff. If you want somebody to help you, you really want to just be nice to them. We're not right. Comcast.
Right, right.
We want to help you, but we're not going to, I'm absolutely not going to put up with somebody saying, hey, I'm going to show up at your office and, kick your ass. Well, you know what? Go for it.
Right, yeah.
Show up here.
Go ahead. That's.
But I mean, I just don't think that sometimes people are very brave on the internet. But
oh yeah, I know.
at the end of the day, that's a very, very small percentage of the overall customer base. And, you know, you don't have a lot of that. I mean, we have a lot of just great customers. I love working with them. I love talking to them. I love being able to find them something that they want. I mean, that's obviously, you know, why I do this for a living instead of, you know, retiring and living on an island in the Caribbean.
Right.
If only I could do that.
Yeah. I was about to say, yeah, you would just go do that.
I think I'd move to Northern California and buy a winery and live there. But go ahead.
Yeah, I was about to say, I are you telling me that you could just go retire to the
No, I wish I could. But,
okay. Yeah. In which case, why are we having this conversation?
I tell you what. I mean, I'm never going to be Jeff Bezos, but you know, the fact of the matter is, I enjoy what I do. That's why I continue to do it.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know what? It's true to this day. I've been in working adjacent to the anime industry for my entire adult career, and in those 17 years, rare is the person. If you get into anime for like the money, you get out of it really quick. But if you get into it because you love it, you stay there for a really long time. And that's, I've noticed that. Let's see here. Alex Smith wants to know what's happening with all the exchanged Turn A Gundam DVDs. Are you going to build a shed?
I'm going to build a shed. I'm thinking I'm going to give them to all my friends and family for Christmas. Because, you know, I don't have to go Christmas shopping.
Hey, there you go. Remainder DVDs.
Honestly, I'm sure that they'll just be, we'll just recycle them and destroy them.
Right. Okay.
We'll probably give some to clubs, and you know, we'll give some to libraries. I mean, any way that I can use it to support, you know, getting new people to watch a show, I'll certainly do that first.
It's a really good show for you know, if you got a bunch of spare copies of it, more people getting exposed to Turn A Gundam. You know, it's pretty good. Cyber Mormon wants
next to your Popoton.
Yeah, right. I'll put seven copies of Turn A Gundam next to my shelf on Popoton, and the other one. Papua. I got a couple of copies of that one, too.
Papua.
Yeah.
There you go.
Cyber Mormon wants to know if you've ever seen the 1983 movie, The Right Stuff. Of course you have.
Yes, I have.
I was about to say.
It's been a few years since I've watched that, but yeah, I've seen it.
You were in your 20s in the 80s, right? Ish?
No.
20s or 30s?
20s in the 90s.
You were in your 20s in the 90s?
Really? I was in high school in the 80s.
So you were a young.
Don't make me even older than I am.
I'm just saying. I'm just trying to figure out what age you were when The Right Stuff came out. That's what I'm trying to figure out.
When I was. Oh, you mean when Right Stuff was started?
No, when the movie The Right Stuff came out. I'm trying to figure out how old you were.
Let's see what?
It was 83.
Well, I don't know that I watched it when it came out.
Okay.
But I would have been 11.
All right.
So no.
Okay.
I doubt I watched that when it came out, but I have seen it.
Because my dad forced me to watch that, and I hated it.
He forced you to watch it.
Oh, yeah. No, my dad was obsessed with the space program. You know, when your dad forces you to go to, like, air and space museums, you hate the thing your dad forces you to do, right? He forced that stuff on me.
Come on, that was awesome stuff. What are you talking about?
Well, now...
And you didn't like it?
Now, as an adult, I can go back and be like, all right, I'm going to give this another shot. For a long time, I was turned off of that stuff. All right.
Kind of like when you go out and finally have some Brussels sprouts, and they're like, wow, these are really good. I remember when I was a kid, I thought they were disgusting.
Yeah, right. As I get older, I have more of an appreciation for that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Daniel Hude wants to know the million-dollar question, when are we getting Gundam Wing on Blu-ray? When's it happening?
All good things come to those who wait.
All right. Okay.
I'm going to give you that.
Okay. Thanks. I get that question. I get that answer every time. I'll look forward to it next year.
It's a good answer.
Okay.
Would you prefer never?
No. NOS Anime wants to know what we as fans can do to get more Gundam series released in nice limited formats like Origin and Thunderbolt.
Well, the problem with nice limited formats like that, and you're looking at those titles that he's mentioned in that question, are both Japanese specific releases. Neither one of those are releases that are made here in the States. I mean, those are higher price points. You also have to look at, you know, Thunderbolt has, what, one episode on it? Mm-hmm. And Origin has one long, you know, I think it's one long episode. So if you're willing to pay that kind of price for, you know, a single episode, you know, I probably can make that happen. Most people are not willing to do that. I'd love to make some more nice limited editions of stuff, but that makes the price point that much higher. Now, with the change that we talked about earlier in the way that there has been a shift to the collector type, you know, products out there, you know, certainly we continue to look at how we can make that happen, because people do want nice releases of products that that are more than just, you know, a standard you know, Blu-ray that sits on their shelf. The biggest problem, of course, is the price point. So we kind of would get, I get roasted over the coals. I put a really nice product out and it's $199.99, and then I'm going to get, well, why are you ripping us off?
Right.
Or do I put them out at a, you know, at a price point that's lower, and then people say, well, how come you didn't put out the limited version? So I mean, you know, we look at it. And I would love to do that, and you know, certainly there's some stuff that I think might be good for that in the pipeline, but the price point would be significantly higher in order to do that. So as fans, to get more of that, you would have to be willing to pay a higher price.
All right. Blake Schwartz wants to know, what do you think the most important factor for an anime's commercial success is, and has that changed significantly in recent years? Well, that's a toughie.
Oh, boy. What would I say to that?
Man, if you ask me, the answer is the writing at this point.
Well, it depends on if the question is an anime's commercial success in terms of just sales in the market, or an anime's commercial success in terms of just, you know, the fact that it's a good product that will be long-lived and a perennial-type product. I mean, if you want to look at, you know, the basics, I mean, I've always felt, regardless of whether it's anime or anything else, you know, the product all depends upon the story. You know, if you don't have a good story, you what do they call it, slapping the lipstick on the pig. I mean, you can only make something so good if the story isn't there. You can throw special effects at something, and you can throw, you know, money at marketing or whatever, but at the end of the day, if there's no story, nobody's going to want to watch it. In terms of actually being able to commercialize a product, Ben, I think that, you know, the change in the way product is presented to customers here now with the simulcasts and the marketing in that manner, I think has been, you know, one of the bigger factors to move towards a commercial success versus back in the day when it was just straight, let's market the finished goods. You have to be able to get awareness of that product. Just as it is difficult to get awareness of catalog product to people who are focused on new releases, if you don't have your new release have some type of buzz or somebody have any interest in it or know what it's about, or if they're not aware of it, again, that makes it even more difficult. If there's no story, then it's not going to be watchable. And if there's a great story but nobody knows about it, then it's, you know, essentially, I guess, it becomes a cult classic if you want to look at it that way. But so I guess if you, you know, the long portion of this big long-winded you know, rant is the story, I think, in terms of the actual product itself, you know, followed by obviously bringing that story to fruition with good, you know, quality production values. But, you know, the second side of that is going to be being able to get people to know what it is and know what's there.
Right. Yep. Bunny Cartoon wants to know, speaking of catalog, any plans for re-releasing old Right Stuff titles like Eye City or Lita?
I don't know that I can jump on any of that at the moment. You know, those are pretty old titles at this point.
Oh yeah,
and it is getting harder and harder to get people to look at catalog titles. Although, you know, there is a market for that. I'm not going to count it out, but you know, I'm going to say that right now I've got plenty of Gundam to work on, so I'm not going to. I need to focus on what's going to move the fastest for me.
I mean, Sean, there's like at least $1 million nostalgia bomb on iCity. Come on. You got to get it out there, man.
Everybody makes fun of iCity, but I mean, it was for its time.
I liked it.
The story and the concept was rather unique.
It's cool.
I mean, it was kind of a it really kind of broke out the genre of that type of product that just hadn't been seen in something like that before. I mean, I think it was a good show. I wouldn't have bought it otherwise.
It's a cool old thing. Like, the look of iCity, like, it's neat. It'd be really cool to have that. I'm just saying.
I mean, it's no Root Search.
You're right, it's no Root Search. Are you dropping something? Did you license Root Search?
Oh, I'm going to put that on 4K Blu-ray.
Okay.
I'm thinking.
All right. I'll pay $59.99 for it.
$199.99.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, there you go. Paul Freeland wants to know, what trends, if any, in anime tastes or consumption can you detect from what you see at Right Stuff? So are you seeing a shift in what anime people like?
I think I'll come back to what I've kind of talked about a couple times here. You know, we're noticing there's more people that are wanting that collector's edition type product. You know, one of the big things that I don't know, I think it was a big surprise to Yen Press as an example, was that Spice and Wolf limited edition book.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that thing came out and it was sold out immediately.
Right.
Not only was it sold out immediately, you know, it was because they stated how many they'd numbered. You know, people were like, well, I want the numbered version, and a bunch of that numbered version was actually held back for author signings. So nobody got that numbered version. If you didn't order it, like, the minute we put that up on the site, you didn't get it. I mean, and that was the same pretty much anywhere.
Hmm.
You know, and we did a, you know, we had, when they reprinted that book, I mean, we bought every last copy we could, and it's all gone. So, I mean, there is a demand for high quality goods, and that's even though that price point is higher, there's certainly a demand for it. What other trends could I say? The targeting of female customers has been kind of interesting this last year. When we get into some titles that, you know, normally the audience on the video side is more heavily skewed to the males. But there are definitely been some titles like, Haikyuu as an example, or Free. Yuri on Ice, I suppose, would be another one, would be a good title mm-hmm. to use in that category. I mean, titles that are marketed to a different demographic have been kind of interesting this year. I haven't seen that, you know, that's more prevalent than I've had seen in the past. The other thing that I would say is kind of interesting that I've watched over the course of the last 2 years. I mean, the ebook was supposed to come out and kill books off, but yet I don't see that. We sell more books every single day. I cannot believe how many books come through here. I think that there are plenty of people out the market that still want a printed book.
Obviously. So, that's cool.
So, I mean, I'm personally that way. I would always pick a printed book over an ebook unless I'm, you know, flying on a plane and I have six of them or something. But it is interesting to see that something like that was supposed to be dead and nobody was interested in it, and nobody was going to buy it, you know, has kind of had a resurgence. I suppose you could look at that in vinyl too, I suppose, which is kind of interesting. But
yeah.
But you know, trends wise, I mean, I definitely am seeing, you know, the product that streamed, you know, I see a jump on the related merchandise or books on it. I see the, you know, the collector's editions really growing. And I see the customers, pushing more and more towards Blu-ray on the video side.
All right. Do you, Ford DM wants to know if you have a personal favorite Gundam series or film?
Wing.
All the more ironic that we still don't have it.
Well, all good things come. So.
All right. Never put it out so I can just harass you about it forever.
Yeah, I think that'll be it. I'm going to hold this back. All Gundam fans in the universe, you can't have Wing because of Zack.
Yeah, I just want to keep hassling Sean about it. Final Fury K, speaking of which, wants to know when we're going to get these Utena Blu-rays.
We had an issue with materials there. which was really the biggest holdup that we were running into. Now that that stuff is in place, I think I mentioned that earlier in the year, but you know that's actually in production. So it's being done. It was an issue with, we wanted to get the material. I'm not going to put out a product that looks bad, especially not a product like that. So now that we have everything that we need, I think that'll be soon.
Cool. Looking forward to that. Similarly, Sarah wants to know if you have a favorite Iyashike show.
Jeez.
You know, relaxing, calming, like Aria.
Well, I mean, you got to look at something like, I've always liked Aria. I think that's a calming show, period. I mean, I've always enjoyed that product. So, you know, I guess if I'm going to come back and say that would be my favorite when it would come to something like that. I mean, give me just a second, Zach. I got somebody whacking on the door here.
Oh, no problem.
Sorry, you're going to have to edit that out. Sorry.
No problem.
Anyway, I've always told everybody that my favorite show is Tyler, and I think Tyler is fantastic because it has a Zen feel.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I like about it. But in terms of, you know, like a smooth, you know, show that's calming, you know, I would agree Aria would probably be my favorite.
All right. David wants to know, who is the genius behind licensing Yakitate Japan? I guess that was you, right?
That would be me.
Okay. All right,
but I like the fact that I'm called a genius. That makes me very happy.
What genius? A great mind of the 21st century.
What kind of what kind of idiot decided to license that? In which case, well, it wasn't me then.
I don't know who that was. Elliot asks, what Gundam title has been the most unique production process? So I guess which Gundam presented the most challenges for release so far?
The most challenges?
Yeah, like which one was like hardest to get the materials, needed the most work?
I would probably say that the most challenging one, I mean, it depends on what you're talking about, just technically or just, you know, it was the most challenging one was the first one only because we had to get, you know, ramped up and running.
Sure.
You know, regular Gundam first was our first Blu-ray release. So the, you know, first Gundam had its challenges. But I mean, in terms of, you know, just straight struggles, I would say probably After War simply because it was, that one had to be translated from scratch. We had to go through a lot of approval processes for that because, you know, everything has to be approved. Materials were complicated because it was deep catalog. So, I mean, I would say that's probably, you know, in terms of effort, or that was probably the most difficult one so far.
All right. Finally, from Land of Obscusion, he wants to know if there's anything Gundam that you're not allowed to bring over, or is it just extraneous things? So, you know, besides Blu-rays that haven't been released yet, is it just extraneous things like Gundam Episode 15 or the dub of the original trilogy?
Well, both of those two would be the only thing that I'm aware of. I can't bring over that one episode because Tamino doesn't like it, and he's forbidden it from ever being released anywhere outside of Japan. And that dub, nobody liked it over there, so we weren't allowed to use it.
Okay. All right.
If you have that on a disc or a tape or something, you hold on to it, because that's going to be the only time you're ever going to see it.
Okay. That's good advice. All right. That's our last question. That actually wraps us up. Thank you so much for coming back. I'm glad we got a chance to talk again, and you know, looking forward to doing it again next year.
Okay. Well, thank you, Zach. I appreciate it and enjoy the conversation. And
okay, that's our show. Okay, that's our show. Enormous thanks to Sean for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating, review. We'd really appreciate it. And I'll see you all next week.